Episode 61 with Funny Talik. In today's episode, I sit down with Funny and we discuss how she got into personal training from a background in wrestling to then getting into competing in bodybuilding, finding her way to her now practice and teaching of calisthenics, breathing, and intentional movement. We also get to discuss the satisfaction in producing things with quality that quantity cannot quite come close to, and the act of quantifying things, which basically manifests itself into ticking off the boxes of achievement within our life, and kind of how that has can have a negative impact on our experience. Funny is a thoughtful, caring, and intelligent person, and honestly, I'm really glad I got to sit down with her today and chat over some of these topics alongside her and sort of riff off some of my own perceptions and self-reflections that she gave great insight into and definitely added to my thinking within that conversation. So I'm grateful for that. And she has her own podcast. If you guys want to go check more out on her specifically and specific to her business and the kind of the act of calisthenics, breathing and intentional movement and what that all looks like. Her Instagram is Mobility Training AU and her podcast is called Fika with Funny. Hopefully I said that right. That basically just represents sort of sit down, relax, have a coffee and sort of just listen to her audio experience, her audio library on her sort of teachings on breathing, intentionality, and some different Q&As that she has up on that audio experience, her podcast. You can find her on her website, mobilitytraining.com.au. And if you guys enjoyed the episode, enjoyed the conversation, I would love if you could support the podcast and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you choose to listen to your podcast these days. And if you can, tell a friend, it goes a long way for us and just gets new people into this conversation, which I'm always grateful for. And if you guys are here from Instagram, what's up? Thanks so much for hopping over platforms and spending time with us today and just being a fly on the wall in this conversation. Without further ado, enjoy the conversation. So we'll kind of start things off here as far as I think it's helpful for context. So the main goal of this conversation that you and I kind of chatted about was your Instagram post that, you know, I think I pulled two kind of quotes from it. One, favoring, you were in a place where you're favoring ticking boxes and focusing on the end goal in just all areas of life, just in general. And the fact that you like to quantify things, which I think we can all relate with so heavily, depending on what stage we're at, I think with a lot of self-reflection and self-awareness, whether you know it or not, I think we're all box tickers and quantifiers. And then the second one, we'll bring these back. The second one though is there's a nice satisfaction in producing things with quality that quantity cannot come close to, which I really like that and how you articulated that, because I would definitely agree. And so with context, I think it'd be helpful to kind of intro how you got some context about how you started to train folks, how you got into it, the short, brief evolution, however brief that is for you. I mean, take your time, but just basically giving context leading into how you got here and how you evolved into kind of what you do now, and then we'll crack into the other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can talk about this forever and sort of give context and your story, but I guess I started off wrestling when I was quite young, and I think that gave firstly an interest for training and training people, but then it also sort of snowballed into something that was more sort of mental and like mental struggles around competition, training, and that side of things. And I think the wrestling put a lot of pressure on me. And it sort of, I sort of ended up craving attention. I ended up being very like afraid of failure and, you know, what other people would think of me when I was wrestling, what it would look like, you know, all of those sort of things. And I think later in life and as I was growing up, that sort of ended up being me doing a lot of things and trying to get that attention constantly and getting confirmation for everything that I was doing. And I think that that is where the box ticking sort of came about. And I think that it quite stifled my learning in many regards, because I think that I just ended up doing a lot of things. I had a lot of ideas and I was just doing one thing after the other. And then it was never really with full quality or full power and intention. And so, yeah, I just ended up doing a lot of things and maybe not that good, you know? And so I think that was a big thing that was taking hold of me as I was growing up. And I, just to talk a little bit more about me and what I do and all of that, I went from wrestling to doing a bodybuilding comp and doing that type of training. And when I got into personal training and I started working, I wanted to coach people for bodybuilding comps as well. And later on, I realized that that's actually not at all what I would like to do. And so I found a lot of joy and enjoyment in calisthenics, strength and mobility, which is sort of what I do today, but with a heavy focus on teaching people how to learn to feel their bodies and sort of the internal landscape, not just the external stuff. So it's sort of combining all of these things together, like the internal sort of feelings, what comes up with how you are performing exercises, whether you should proceed doing that exercise or maybe take a step back. And with that is the breathing is a big part of that as well. So I guess that is a little bit of what I do today, I guess.
Yeah, no, thank you. I want to pull something out of that briefly and kind of just talk on it. And so with the quantity of things, I think we all hit a point. And again, when I say I'm using a very general, like royal we, but I think a lot of us hit that point where we're doing, especially at a young age, like I was in a similar boat. So I can sympathize with that. In regards to, I was just doing a lot. I was working long hours. I was doing a lot of different things. I've always been definitely an idea person. And things really didn't start to manifest for me until ideas actually were followed up by action, a lot of action and a lot of intentional focused action, like you mentioned. One thing that came to mind, and I was kind of thinking about it as you brought it up, was, do you think there's, and again, like this is kind of just something to discuss. Do you think there's a part of that it's you're insecure with the quality of effort you can give within something, or your talent level within something, or your abilities within a given something? So basically, is it a sacrifice for quantity, but because of the maybe an insecurity within the quality of what you're doing? Or do you think it's just a part of being young and learning? Because I mean, there's a component to you always hear, and I think cliches, although they are cliche, cliches obviously happen and occur within our language for a reason. Like it's something that happens very often, and we've sort of just desensitized and generalized to it. To an extent. And so it is kind of a cliche in that you have to try a lot of things before you figure it out. And even going back and reading a book called Range by David Epstein is kind of, it was a really good sort of an evidence-based account of your ability to have range actually benefits you greatly within your, across a lifespan, you know, taking the difference between like Tiger Woods, who has obviously specialized on in golf since he was 2 years old, and that's all he's ever known to that regard, to someone who's tried so many different things, who's a multi-sport athlete, who, you know, played all the sports growing up and then focused later on something that, okay, I have to focus on something at this point. So anyways, I'll cut that there. And just, is there something that kind of stands out there? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I guess there is definitely a part of me that is, I guess, struggling with the whole, I don't know enough and I need to know X, Y, and Z before I do this, or, you know, I can get all these great ideas, but I can also come up with just as many or probably twice as many reasons for not doing them because I don't feel like I am good enough to do them. And it's an interesting thing because it's something that I've been working a lot on probably the past 2 years. And up here in my head, I know that I am good enough to teach all of this, these things that I want to teach. And for some reason, it's not being fully embodied yet. And so it's almost like my brain knows it, but my heart is just not really like accepting that or like embodying it fully yet. And I think it's going to come. But I also think that I need to override that sort of that voice in my head sometimes and just go, well, screw you. I'm going to do this anyway because I know that I can and I know that I have the knowledge and I know that it would help a lot of people. So the last probably 2 years, maybe a year and a half, that's what I've been doing a lot of the time. So like, for example, I wrote this massive breathing article and I think it took me 8 months to finish that because I kept coming back to this. No, I can't do it. I can't do it. I shouldn't do it. And all these different reasons. And I'm like, nah, I need to do it. And I just kept doing it. And I finished it in November last year. So I think that is definitely a big part of this whole thing. Yeah, I think that was the main thing that I wanted to say there.
Yeah, no, that's good. There's a lot of things there. I've been speaking on the podcast about a couple of things that you kind of brought up. One, the last episode with Lyndon and Martin from JPS, I actually discussed, we had a pretty nuanced conversation over imposter syndrome and the pros and cons of what that looks like within one's life and specific to kind of this industry, but non-specific to really all industries, just in general as a person. I mean, I think we're all to an extent, and again, there's a continuum of where you fall on this scale of how sure are you of yourself? Like we're all narcissistic to an extent, right? But like, how, like, are you past the threshold of like, you have zero insecurities about your abilities, or do you toe the line, or are you just, you know, what side are you on there? And I, you know, obviously there's, everyone's different. There's probably a healthy amount. And, you know, I subscribe to, if there are extremes, the answer probably lives in the gray somewhere. It probably lives in the middle. Whether it's favored to one side or the other, it's probably close to the middle there. So, but this concept of imposter syndrome has been on my mind over the last couple of years, because similar to you in that there's things. I'm an observer. I'm an analyzer to a fault, typically an overanalyzer, and I've been that way since I was young. And it manifested itself into me being extremely shy when I was young. And I want to say, obviously I don't know, but I want to say after thinking through it more that being an observant, like overanalyzer when I was young, I there was so many things, inputs coming in. And I honestly, I had no clue what to do with them. Like I was just, I'd get overwhelmed by them and then I would shut down. And then I didn't know how to like what to manifest that into. And I think I'm learning as I get older how those inputs can manifest. Like, how can I take something in and use it productively? Whether that's constructive feedback, criticism, sort of acute anxiety. Like, anxiety can be a definite tell to there's a problem here that I need to address. And the anxiety is sort of going to point me in the right direction. And if I do my job right, that anxiety shouldn't stick around too long because I could address that and then I can move on. But there's a point to that. Within the imposter syndrome, there's a level of productivity I think that we sort of got to in that in the last episode, where you need that feeling almost pulling you in a direction of improvement. You need a little of that. You know, you need a certain amount of that. Depending on where you are within that, I think it's healthy to always have some extent of sort of playing tug of war, I think is a good visual representation with, and hopefully the side of progression and improvement and moving forward is going to win that tug of war. But that doesn't stop the other gremlin on the other side of, you know, insecurity and doubt and all of these things just keep pulling you back in the other direction continuously. And so I think it's important that we do have some sort of imposter syndrome. So that's kind of where we got to last week, was a matter of, because I kind of posed it to those guys, and the way I asked the question was, I've since reframed the way I would ask this question, which is, I'm really glad I get to do stuff like this, because the way I framed the question originally, with sort of subconsciously, was in a way that it assumes that all imposter syndrome is bad and we should just try to get rid of it. And 2 hours later in this conversation, we finally got to the understanding that, or I finally got to that understanding of, shit, maybe there's a level of sort of fundamental usefulness to that feeling. And before I go on, did you have any thoughts there?
I haven't thought, like, I'm pretty aware that I've got imposter syndrome, or that I've had a lot more of it in the past, and that it is, this constant struggle. I guess the one thing that I was thinking about was that I remember when I was younger, I used to always portray that I knew a lot of things and I was super confident in myself. So I was a bit opposite to you in terms of you being the, analyzer and observer and stuff like that. I was very often very outspoken or outgoing and, like, you know, taking things that I wanted and that type of thing. And looking back at it, it's a bit difficult to explain it in words, but there is this very specific feeling that comes with that false confidence that I used to have back then, that I used to, I guess portray myself as knowing a lot of stuff. And this was definitely in the beginning of, you know, my personal training career, where I didn't know much at all, but I was just starting off and I portrayed myself of knowing a lot of things and, you know, being very forward and and that sort of thing. And I guess that comes with a bit of arrogance and, you know, like that type of thing as well, which is, I guess, one side of the spectrum of these things as well. And so I guess bringing it back to imposter syndrome, where I get this voice in my head now where I'm like, maybe I don't know so much about this, could actually be quite a good and useful thing for me. But at the same time, I can't let that, it can be a reality check, maybe, or like a little bit of a bit of something that stops me before I just keep on going and just being that false confident person, I guess.
It's sort of like a checkpoint, I think.
Yeah, a checkpoint is probably a good way of putting it. Yeah. So I agree with you. I think that this struggle with imposter syndrome can not be just a bad thing, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it progresses you in the right direction. And I think it keeps you humbled enough through an endeavor to where, and again, like there's this phenomenon that, again, is sort of a cliche at this point, which makes it have an inherent truth almost to it, which is the more you know, or the more you learn, the less you feel like you know, or something like that, right? It's sort of like an internet Albert Einstein quote that keeps getting changed around and given to other people. But he's known for thousands of quotes, I think, that he never actually said, but we can thank the internet for that. So I think there's this point of kind of just to tie a knot on this subject, and we may come back around to it, but I think there's a point of balance that we have to have. I think obviously with anything, in at different times, I think it's helpful to be able to see things as sort of this dial of a dimmer switch or an intensity switch, where we can sort of turn up and turn down, or depending on what the dimmer switch looks like in your country, up or down, or you can turn it like a dial or something like that. But the level of intensity of the feeling or of an action, I think it's important to be able to adjust as you go, because I think, you know, you almost need in the beginning, you almost need these manic episodes of obsession towards something. I think to really feel like, to feel the, almost the vector of what is going on. You know, you need a direction, and you need a speed of direction that allows you to fully grasp what you're doing and like fully sink in. And this was me sort of with competing. This was me with getting into all of this stuff. I got really obsessed with it. And my life revolved around it to the point where I almost too much, you know, I let that go too far to where I ended up running away from it. And then hopefully I'm grateful that I circled back and found and I'm finding a more even keel with it. But I think there's productivity to the obsession. Again, a healthy obsession towards something. And I think where imposter syndrome sort of acts as that, we can call it a troll, right? That's sort of that checkpoint of like, you know, or we could go wizard here and like, you shall not pass sort of language, but it's, you have to get past that, right? And there's this blockade that sort of hopefully can stop you from going too off the deep end and getting into some dirt that you can't quite clean off, which basically, you know, there's folks that I've watched sort of grow and evolve, and then you can sort of see where that blockade had already been torn down, and they just didn't get stopped by it, and so they kept going, and now they're almost off the deep end of like they whether they were very evidence based, very scientific driven, you know, science driven, to now they're just way out of their wheelhouse. They're talking about things they just don't know about, they couldn't know about, like it's just, I think there's a point to that imposter syndrome a little bit, and I think it's almost like anxiety in the fact of like, it can be a really good sort of target or an indicator of, look, it's almost like an alert, like a red flag pops up, you know, and it's like, look, there needs to be, whether it's on your computer, like there needs to be some updates that we go through here before you can move on. And that's kind of where my head's at with that.
I have found personally that it's very, very difficult to go through these sort of things on my own, because I tend to be way too much in my bubble and way too subjective. I can't effectively look at myself objectively. And so having a teacher or someone to talk to about these sort of things has really been helpful for me. Because they are going to be able to tell you stuff that they see that you can't see yourself. And I think that's really valuable. I don't know if you have an experience with that sort of thing.
I do. I think that was the beginning of kind of me getting into the really deep into the weeds of the more education side of things. I was around people that were seeing things and observing things that I just didn't know how to see and observe yet. And now it's like, you know, once you've seen it, you can't unsee it, right? Like, I think an easy indicator of this is sort of like, you know, I'm pretty established. I have a foothold in the sort of the exercise technique, you know, side of things, right? And or an investment, I would say, of time and effort. And, you know, I spend a lot of time and effort to try and speak to that subject. And there were things in the beginning where, just using that as an example, where I just saw a movement. Like I saw a row. I just saw a press. Okay, it looks like, yeah, it looks fine. And I may say, if there's something that's like drastic, right? Like you're going to break your back in like a overhead press. Like obviously I could fix that, but I didn't quite know how to address like, okay, clearly here there's a breakdown in the chain, right? So there's a breakdown in this part of the chain. And what that means is it's not there. It has to be upstream somewhere. And so how can we track this upstream? And you have to first learn what lies upstream. Like you have to almost create this map of a checkpoint system in regards to whether it's a certain movement, and all movements have different checkpoints, right? Like they have different points at which it's like, okay, we need a neutral spine, we need a neutral position, we need our abs engaged here to stabilize the pelvis here. And there's certain things down, sort of down chain, if you start with the head or if you start with the feet and go up. But absolutely, I definitely have experience with that, because it's sort of that you don't know what you don't know, and you can't see what you've never seen, right? You can't describe a color you've never seen before. You know, unless you're in sort of an altered state of consciousness, in which we won't go down that rabbit hole, but it's a matter of like, you know, in our current state of consciousness and our current state of the way we are aware of the world and understand the world, you can't quite describe in our limited capabilities, although vast, limited, we can't describe things we don't know how to describe, right? And it's a test to, and if I hadn't started to really think about these things, I couldn't have necessarily made an explanation to my childhood and found words for it, right? Like it's taken me 20 plus years to come up with an understanding of why was I like that as a kid? And I still don't know if that's right, but I'm trying to make sense of it. And I'm trying to create thoughts around it. And I'm trying to pair our very limited language to that. You know, and there are things that, and like you were saying, like, I don't know what words or how to describe that or what words to use. And I think that happens to a lot of situations. And so we sort of just put the words that we know to it,
yeah,
which a lot of times don't fully describe that happening, that phenomenon that's occurring, or it doesn't explain what you're trying to explain, but it's like, that's the best I can do. Like, that's the best I know how to put words to it. I think the teacher helps you see what you've never seen before, and they help you critically think. And I think whatever the teacher is for you, I think everyone should have that at multiple stages of their life. And I think it's being sort of drawn away from the importance of a teacher that teaches you how to do that versus a teacher that teaches you how to make more money. Because there's that sort of that backwards thinking now where it's like, I don't need to get better at my craft. I just need to learn how to, I need to learn the system. And it's like, if you spend the first 10 years really get, if you spend the first 10 years or this or the first 5 years or the first, whatever it is, like you spend a good chunk of time with the teachers that are just teaching you the subject and the ability to critically think and to see, right? We recently watched Avatar, and what a freaking movie. But in that movie, there's a lot of parallels to, you know, the human going into this other humanoid world, this Pandora world, and she teaches him how to see. Like, she teaches him how to be aware and to be intentional and how to connect with the natural space. And it's like, you need that teacher, right? Or else you're just going to go in. And I, as an American, I can say with brute force and ignorance and just say, well, I know what the hell's going on. I think the teacher is important. And I think it's important to spend time early on investing in that. That as there's no guarantee for the future, I think you need to prepare yourself that there is a guarantee, and hope that it comes about, sort of.
Yeah, I can. There was a lot that you said there, but one thing that I can really relate to is this sort of thinking back of, you know, when you grew up and your childhood, and trying to make sense of where did this trait come from and why did I do that, or why did I end up doing all these things. And funnily enough, when Luke and I got stuck in Sweden, but it was really nice, actually.
It looked like a luxury. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. And it was great to spend time with my parents. And so we lived with my parents for about 5 months. And during this time, I had some really important work done on myself. And you know how, I'm sure you've experienced this as well. You know, when you go back to your parents' house and, you know, you're at a family gathering or something, or just with your parents, and you just sort of slip into a person that you were like 10 years ago?
My wife and I talk about that all the time. Yes.
Yeah. And so this was a super interesting thing to observe for me when we basically moved in with my parents for 5 months. And I just sort of kept slipping into a person that I am not longer, and getting into certain patterns and behaviors and, you know, just different things like that. And because I could recognize that happening, thankfully, and I could sort of stay present with it and observe it, maybe not fully objectively, but somewhat, I could figure out a few things from when I was younger and when I was growing up. And there was actually a couple of times where just an image of, or like a memory came up in my head. And I'm like, that is one of the things that led me to do these things. And it was really interesting to be put into that environment again, and actually just being a more present human being in that now very familiar environment, and just finding myself being pulled into these like just patterns and just stopping myself from it and just working with it and trying to find my new sort of position, or my new sort of new position in the family and in that sort of environment. because I haven't lived with my parents for many, many years, and I'm a completely different person now compared to, you know, 8 years ago or whenever that was that I lived with them. So I can really relate and resonate with all that sort of work and thinking back and observing and figure things out.
Yeah, and I want to ask you a question on that, but the parents, I've been thinking a lot about the parent-child relationship over the past couple of years, and it's an interesting one for me to think about because, you know, you spend such a limited time of your life with your parents. I mean, it's obviously so influential, and you couldn't exist necessarily without them, and you wouldn't be the people you are without them if you've been fortunate enough to keep them in your life. But they also don't quite know who you are for most of your life, right? Like, I don't have time, unfortunately, to catch my parents up to speed on who I am. And fortunately, there are things that my parents, if they're interested in figuring out that, you know, we live in a world now where it's a lot easier for them to learn, right? They could listen to my podcast. They can listen, you know, hundreds of hours worth of recorded conversations of me going very deep and nuanced and considering things openly and sort of with vulnerability, sort of publicly, not publicly, because there's a huge listenership, you know, that of a large, you know, podcast, but it's openly to enough people to where it's like, this is an open discussion. And I think the podcasting is a good way, or mine, at least the way that I express myself through this medium, other, you know, outside of my writing or outside of my videos or something like that. Like, I feel like this, if my parents really had the drive and wanted to figure out, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong if they do or don't, like, they're people and they're adults and they need to keep doing what they want to do, right? That they sacrificed the first 18 years of my life to me, and my brother, and our purpose and our cause, right? And I think that's the most admirable thing, any one of the most admirable things anyone can really do. But I think the child parent dynamic is an interesting one, in that you really become who you are after you leave. And then each time you come back, it's almost undoubtedly going to happen where you sort of have to slip into a part of who you used to be to then relate back to your parents. I'm not saying this is all like an occurrence that's going to happen 100% of the time, but, and again, you may have parents that are a bit different, but there's almost a component of your parents know who you were through this period of time, and they're always trying to draw back on that, right? That's where the conversation always tends to go, because they don't really know much about you now. They know what you tell them or you share with them, but they don't know the ins and outs. They don't know the deep, meaningful conversations you have with Luke or your friends, or, you know, they don't really know any of that stuff. And it can be uncomfortable to, if you're not privy to doing it all the time, to have those conversations. And so there's this interesting relationship we have with our parents, I'd say on average, that we become who we are away from them. We get to that stage because of them, but we really become who we are away from them and outside of their supervision and all of that stuff. And then when you return back, you almost have to an extent sink into who you were when they really knew you. And I think they really know your core values, but hopefully, but like, there's an extent to you that they just don't quite grasp at this stage. But I don't know. Do you want to comment on that? Or do you have any thoughts there before I ask the question?
I don't know that. It's tricky because you tend to be really, like, there's a strong force. I felt when I was at my parents' house that there was this super, super strong force that was moving me into those patterns that I used to do and behaviors and that person that I was. But I also noticed that they, at different times, there was a bit of like struggling communication because I was trying to be the person that I am now. And that was probably new. And we just didn't really know how to communicate well with each other because it's just too new, right? And so that was one thing. And other times, I think that I do want to agree with you that it may be easier and better in some situations to just be that person where we can communicate. We know how to communicate when I am that person. But if I can at least try and be that person consciously rather than mechanically, just moving into that and just go on autopilot, I think that's going to still make a difference for me at least, and I think for them as well. And the other thing I wanted to say is when Luke and I left for the Netherlands, which is where we're at now, Mom was like, you know, it was really nice to get to know you again.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she recognizes that. And she's like, it's so nice to have spent every day with you and just doing, you know, the normal stuff that we always sort of get to do. Obviously, I have two siblings and they don't live with my parents. So it's they see each other more often, but I'm sure they have some kind of this sort of thing going on as well, where they don't spend enough time together anymore on a sort of everyday basis, that it also becomes this thing of like, you know, who are you? Who am I? And, you know, how do we work together and how do we communicate? Yeah, but I think that was a lovely sort of comment from my mom. She sort of recognized that. So
that's beautiful. I love that. And I think we're ever evolving, obviously, in the way that we interact with the world. But I think it's an interesting, on behalf of your parents, obviously to you, but even the other way around, like you get to learn who your parents are as an adult, you know, as an aware citizen, as an aware being in this experience. And I think that in itself is so cool, right? And I like my parents and I love my parents. And I think there's a difference. And I think there's points to which we can love our family, but we don't always like our family. Right? Like, would you be friends with these people if you weren't related to them? Some of them, definitely not. But some of them, yeah. I like them and I love them. But to the one point that you brought up, for sure, I think it's important that obviously I think it's more of like the mess on a mechanical level, like you said, you're going to slip into old patterns if you're not aware of it. But if you can be conscious of it, if you can be aware of it, it's important that you're actively trying to bridge the gap for them, right? Because this is a growth experience, not only for you, but for them. And I would say that they're, without them necessarily knowing, you know, maybe they do know, but if they don't know, they're really like I think this is a beautiful way to tie in what your mother said. They're going to get to experience a new part of you that they maybe never would have gotten to experience. And, you know, I'm not a parent. I can't relate to this, but I can't imagine the feeling of getting to experience your beautiful creation existing in a world that is very complicated, but they seem to have it somewhat figured out, the important bits, right? Yeah. And not everything, you know, there's definitely aspects there's undertones and under sort of backbones in the foundation. They're going to be like, I really, you know, I think we did that for, you know, I think we taught her that. And I think we did a good job. But there's going to be parts of you that they didn't teach you. right? And you're going to get to say that back to them. And I think that's so beautiful because they're learning who you are. They're growing as a person. You're growing as a person. And I think that your parents are obviously these things typically correlate because it's rare that our parents really extend past the place at which we grew up. You know, my parents have all definitely moved around since, but I think it's very common for at least to be in the same general area, right? At least in the same town or the same house even. So when you go back to visit, you're even in your old room, right? Where you're experiencing a very familiar place, like you said, as a new person, like almost in this altered state of consciousness where you're like, I'm so familiar with this and I'm seeing it from a completely different lens. And it's so odd, but it's so cool at the same time because you're able to recognize and almost be more objective, right? You can zoom out a lot further now because you are so familiar with the landscape, right? You're not so worried about, you know, I think one of our limitations is our narrow scope of awareness in a lot of different situations, which obviously keep us alive and have kept us alive for a while. But there's a point at which I think where you get so familiar with the territory that you can sort of relax those eyes. And it's almost like those paintings where you have to, those like maze paintings where you have to relax your eyes to see what's actually in the photo, where you can sort of zoom out and you sort of get this new way of looking at such a familiar space or situation or relationship or something like that. And I think whether it's a childhood home or I think your parents are a great example of this, but I think it's a beautiful thing to be aware of. And I think it's beautiful that your mom said that because I think that's a massive compliment. And I think it's a massive sort of luxury to be able to experience that with a parent on a very intimate level. And that's an intimate level of connection that not many of us get to experience. That's really cool. I wanted to ask you, you know, you said when you were home, you had an example, and if you don't have one off the top of your head, that's fine. But do you have an example of where you were able to see something, like you said, sort of in your, you saw where that trait came from? And then how that led you to where you maybe did go or have gone since? Do you kind of have an example off the top of your head?
Yeah, without sort of going too deep into it, so I've been working with a teacher on a more sort of spiritual level, I guess, the last year and a half or something now. And so I speak to him every week, every second week or something, and was doing that during this time as well. And so I think to come back to this thing of like favoring quantity over quality and ticking boxes and feeling like I'm not good enough and that sort of thing, I think being put into my old environment, which is the town where I grew up, it's the house that we built as a family where they still live. And I think all of those things together with us actually spending a bit of time there and then small little things coming up, I sort of could, it was actually after one of my sessions with Mushtaq, who is my teacher, that it just came up and I'm like, those two moments or memories came up and they were directly linked to me feeling inadequate, something that happened when I was younger. And I could see how my sort of thought process and how I've been behaving and how I've been sort of feeling growing up that those sort of moments were masking that, or like leading to those sort of things unraveling. I'm not going to go too deep into it further.
No, it's okay.
It was, I think, one of the important things was that I was probably back in my hometown and I had very similar sort of, I was in a similar environment to when this sort of started happening and those sort of feelings came up for me and thoughts and that sort of thing that just kept unraveling and getting worse. And just that feeling of not being adequate, I think that sort of, I could lead them back to those things.
Yeah. And again, depending on how introspective you get on a week-to-week basis and how self-reflective you may be, or how much of an analyzer you may be, I think we all, again, not all, I think many feel something similar, and whether they're able to articulate that or manifest it into, sort of an experience, I think is a skill in itself. And to be able to, I get more spiritual as I go. I've never been a religious person, but I definitely get more spiritual as I go. And I think a level of connectedness to some universal truth. I do subscribe to the chaos theory of we're just sort of here. And there's a connectedness to all of us, whether that's plants, animals, there's just a connectedness to the world. But I think it did. There's a happening of chaos that sort of pairs with that as an entree. But I definitely get more spiritual as I go. And I think there's something to those happenings. Whether that's where we kind of slap purpose onto something, and whether it's true or not, I don't know if that matters as much as just recognizing something that's sort of just this revelation that came to your head. You're just like, where did that come from? Right. And there's this, it's almost like it came through the roots in the ground, like into your body, like you're a part of the, almost part of the universe at that point. And it's just like, they've been holding these secrets about you for so long, or they've been sort of holding your truths or your revelations for so long that it's like, here you go. Here's, you've paused long enough to receive one. And I think that's a beautiful part of mindfulness, or that's a beautiful part of any sort of meditation practice, or any practice that allows you to sort of slow down and connect more with an internal world over an external world, in which it kind of gets me into where I'd like to finish things today. And that's really with the difference of being a PT in a gym setting versus doing what you do now. What are some of the biggest things that have changed for you? And what are some of the biggest things that you see in clients that you see in terms of, I wrote some things down that I sort of like almost would project onto my understanding of what you do. And I could be completely wrong. So please tell me if I am. Yeah, we'll see. The first one I wrote down was connection. A connection to self and a connection to the environment, a connection to the internal mechanics of the one thing that our one tool to observe the world, and that's our mind or our brain. But through our mind, really, we're able to do and observe and experience the world in front of us. And that was the first one. The second one was kind of more of a general one, but building strong habits was a second one that I wrote down. And I guess those were the only two that I wrote down specific to what I saw you, I sort of wrote down off the top of my head. So, but the connection was the big one, a connection to sort of that internal landscape over an external one. and how to be more self-aware and mindful of an experience and of a physical experience, which I think the bridge and it almost takes us back to how I would view sort of a hunter and gatherer state of a physical yet very aware experience, right? Like you can, if you're in that, if you take yourself back, right, and put yourself in the shoes of like a hunter gatherer lifestyle, there's an awareness and an intensity of physical exertion at different points, right? Obviously there's massive peaks and valleys, but there's an awareness to your physical activity that I think we miss out on. It's sort of a human component that we miss out on a daily basis of really connecting to when we are physically active. And so by the end of the day, I think Luke's actually spoke on this a bit. By the end of the day, you haven't necessarily, I'm paraphrasing, but you haven't taken the time to reflect. And so by the time you lay down, all those thoughts now are, this is the first time you've given yourself a chance to be aware, to be reflective. And so, yeah, you're going to feel somewhat overwhelmed as you lay your head on a pillow because you haven't dealt with any of these things all day and you've left them till now when you're supposed to be sort of at ease. Yeah. So how close was I? I didn't give myself, too many areas to really fuck up, but, connection seems like one.
Well, firstly, I want to say thank you for noticing that, noticing the connection and I guess there is something that comes before that, and there is firstly breathing.
Yeah. That was one that I should have wrote down because I definitely have said that to Cass. I'm like, I don't know exactly what she does all the time as a trainer, but I know she does a lot of with breathing and connection. And that's all I ever say.
I mean, those two things are very integrated. And I guess breathing is something that I do for myself when I am in a session with someone or if I'm writing an email, because it brings me into the present. And if I can be present, it means that I'm going to be helping someone consciously rather than just being a mechanical being. And so I think that the connection with or between me and the student and the sort of teaching that I do, it's that connection comes from breathing well during my practices and staying present, because then I can observe the person in front of me. I can sort of read between the lines in an email and I can sort of figure out, okay, where are they at this point in time and what do we need to work on? And so it comes back to very fundamental sort of principles and practices that I do for myself and my students do, some of them as well. And I think that does bring all of these things up, like the connection, being able to feel your body and be aware of what's going on internally as well as obviously externally when you're doing exercise. So I think it's sort of, that's a lot what I do, I guess.
Yeah. Have you found it challenging that it's mainly online based now?
Yeah.
How's that?
So I really like in person. And before obviously COVID, when I could touch people and, help them into positions and just do all of that stuff, that's the type of work that I really like doing because I feel like I can have a really big impact on a person if I can be there and be close to them, and we can, either we can do an exercise together, which means that we are actually touching each other, or I can just help them in and directing them and that sort of thing. So that's something that you're missing when you're doing online training. But at the same time, I'm sort of gaining a different aspect of it, which is being able to observe through videos and maybe Zoom, and then give them verbal cues and just improve on the the actual verbal communication instead of the tactile communication, I guess. So that's definitely something that is both good and bad with this sort of change, I guess.
Yeah. One thing that came to mind was sort of this exchange of energy that you'd get in person that you just can't get, obviously, online or through Zoom. And that seems like it would be incredibly healing. So especially for someone who hasn't spent much time being present or allowed themselves to be present or aware of the kind of the moment in front of them. And that, and having someone nurturing and caring there to not only guide you and teach you where you need to do what you need to do, how you need to do it, but also to transfer that sort of caring, loving, nurturing energy into, you know, obviously we're not in the seance crystal circle, but like in terms of just the energy transfer of, you know, this is a very human component that I feel definitely is a part of our experience, right? Like this is a part of human touch and human connection and intimacy that is so important and foundational to our sort of well-being, right? And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, don't get, you know, I've in past, you know, throughout my life, there's been moments where it's like, although you may be alongside a journey with someone, there isn't that feeling of connection or positive energy transfer, right? And I think a lot of people, unfortunately, up to this point, have experienced the world without that in their life, whether they don't, maybe they just don't have a partner to give that to them, or maybe their partner just can't quite connect it or can't experience it themselves. And so they can't positively contribute to that experience. And so if you're someone that can consistently be that energy for someone, that sounds incredibly healing. Past the physical gains that you would get, you know, I think it's, yeah, I see a big healing aspect to what you do and a very human love or human connectedness, kind of back to the breath, back to the awareness, back to intention and just feeling sort of this internal working of our movement rather than reacting.
Yeah. I think, firstly, I think that there can be some kind of, for lack of better words, energy or something that can be transmitted through online sort of means, but it's definitely not as potent as it can be in person, I think. And the second thing I wanted to touch on is the ability to go deeper than just the physical. I think that is where there is real change actually happening, because if you can't really connect to your sensations, your feelings and your sensations in your body when you're doing physical exercise, then it becomes really difficult to know when you need to stop because you're about to injure yourself, or when you're doing a type of, I've done this so many times where I put together a program or I do a type of exercise that I think that I want to do, but if I really pay attention to the signals that my body is sending me, I actually don't want to do muscle-ups. I don't care about muscle-ups. You know, I want to stick fight. That's what I want to do. So if we are not connecting at a deeper level and we are just caring about the physical, I think we are missing out, and I don't think that we are going to get change.
I think there's a lot of parallels there between our our experience and our connectedness to what we know to be important versus what we value in the material world. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's, I think, a part of, and I, that's a good connection there, I think, because the muscle ups is equivalent to like that thing you buy that you don't need, right? The muscle ups were there as that thing that you were doing for someone else, or you were doing as sort of an aesthetic add-on to what you truly wanted to do, you know, whether that's stick fighting, right? So stick fighting is your time with family over going to the gym to do muscle ups. It's like, this is just, we're just stick fighting itself. It's like, this is what I want to be doing. This is what's important to me that is positively adding to my life. And it's important to be aware, right? And I think that's where fitness and physical activity and, you know, for some of us, competing gave so much to me, in that I really had this intense awareness of what I was experiencing, whether that was a mind muscle connection to my training experience, or I really learned, what does hunger feel like? Like, but true, like I'm truly, you know, you get to a point where, you know, you experience genuine hunger, and there's, you know, it's not just like, oh, I'm bored, I'll eat. It's like, you know, you've been hungry for hours and you're just like, I got to hold on, man. Like you got to sort of be with it. Right. But, and then obviously there's discipline and there's self-responsibility and self-ownership to a lot of it as well. But I think that comparison of like the recognizing what your body does and doesn't want to do foundationally from a physical sense is a beautiful way to also kind of think about, what do you foundationally want out of your life, like out of your professional career? You know, are you continuously trying to progress your muscle ups, or are you getting better at stick fighting? Like, and who are you doing it for? Right. Obviously those are just, I'm playing with those examples cause you brought them up, but like, the stick fighting looks cool.
Great fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you able to do that? Can Luke stick fight?
Well, I've asked him if he would like to spar with me, but I don't think he dares.
Is he nervous?
I don't know. He just says blank no. So it's hard to like know exactly what that no means.
We'll figure it out. We'll feel it out. He's like an onion, you know?
Yeah.
He's like Shrek. Yeah, well, you'll feel that, I'm sure. I like that. Well, do you have any other comments on that you wanted to add, or we'll kind of end things off with where people can find more of your stuff? And
yeah, I'm pretty active on Instagram. So on Instagram, it's mobilitytrainingau. And I've got a website, which is also mobilitytraining.com.au. And I have a Facebook page as well, but it's not as active as those two. So I'll probably leave it at that.
Yeah. And are you still doing your podcast?
I am. It's I'm calling it a little bit more of an audio library than a podcast, because I feel like it's going to be one of those things where I'm going to do more of in faces and less of in other faces, but I am doing a podcast. It's called Fika with Funny, and Fika is a Swedish word for taking a break with a cup of coffee and a good friend.
So that's one thing that English really, really fucked up when they the I would say very Northern European, however this dialect came to be, right? So we have like Gaelic, you have Swede, like there are words that represent phrases and experiences and a connection to what is happening, right? And English was just like break, coffee, break with coffee. And we don't have that word, right? We don't have those words, which is disappointing. But I guess
it's often adopted in English now, I think. Like
Yeah.
They would, if people know about the word fika, they would actually sometimes use it.
Well, I may use it now.
Good.
Yeah, no, I like that. And I like we'll kind of end here as well, but, you know, that's kind of what I'm doing with my Instagram, and with my sort of social channels, is like creating just, what's the experience I want people to have here, right? What kind of resource do I want this to be for someone? And I have this, I have this very conversational platform that I express myself on, as in the podcast landscape. So I don't feel as I need that elsewhere necessarily. Can I create a library or a resource library of sorts for someone to just go and reference, right? And that's sort of what I'm doing there. And I think that's really cool that you're doing that. Again, I think podcast is it's still so sort of infantile in its structure, right? Like podcast is just it's an umbrella to an audio experience of some kind, whatever that looks like to you. There's no one way or there's that's no true. Even structure, right?
Yeah.
I think that's awesome that you're creating this sort of an audio library of taking a break, you know, relaxing, you know, just listen, breathe, connect. What kind of things do you discuss on that?
So far I think I have 6 episodes, and I've had a couple of episodes about breathing, about body awareness, and then I had a very, very long conversation with my mom and sister about the textile industry, because my mom works as a textile teacher and she's a seamstress as well, and my sister is a textile engineer. And I am also very big into the textiles, knitting and crocheting.
You're a sock maker, apparently.
Yes. I recently created my own pattern. So I did all the alchemical symbols on a pair of socks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they turn out pretty well. So
yeah,
I had an episode about that. And that one is pretty long, but it was a really, really lovely conversation.
Awesome. I appreciate you coming on, and I will, everyone listening, all of her stuff is in the show notes in the description. Go check her out, but I appreciate you. I want to talk to you a couple minutes off air, but I do appreciate you, you coming on.
Thanks, Austin.
Hey guys, Austin here. Thank you again for listening into the episode. It means a lot. If you can, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave the podcast a 5-star review. This does help us grow and be found by others. Also, just wanted to mention, if you guys are interested in free education based around training and nutrition, be sure to check out physiquedevelopment.com/free education, where you will find free downloads, videos, articles, etc. No strings attached. Again, thank you. Chat soon.